The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Liz Elliott for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Flavor. Life is full of flavor, especially in the kitchen. I have so many great kitchen stories and healthy living tips to share with you. And, of course, I'll give you delicious recipes in every episode. In July, the heat can make cooking the last thing anyone wants to do. This month, I have a few very easy recipes that require very little effort in the kitchen. Plus, we'll learn about some great cooking techniques for cooks who are blind or visually impaired. Some of my most vivid childhood summer memories involve trying to get every last bit of silk off of an ear of corn. While I found a great easy recipe for a corn salad that uses canned corn so we can enjoy the summer produce a little faster and a little easier. This recipe comes from WholeFoodsMarket.com. From WholeFoodsMarket.com, this is a recipe for sweet corn and black bean salad. Simple to prepare, colorful, and flavorful, this salad combines sweet corn, tender black beans, crisp red peppers, and zesty cilantro in a simple lime and rice vinegar dressing. The ingredients are 1 15.25-ounce can of whole sweet kernel corn, drained, 1/2 medium red onion, finely chopped, 2 tablespoons seasoned rice vinegar, 1/4 cup extra virgin olive oil, 2 tablespoons lime juice, 3/4 teaspoon kosher salt, 1/2 teaspoon ground black pepper, 2 13.4-ounce packages of no salt added black beans, rinsed and drained, 1 red bell pepper, cored, seeded, and chopped, 1/2 cup fresh cilantro leaves, finely chopped, 1 clove garlic, minced, 1 medium avocado, diced. In a large bowl, whisk together the vinegar, lime juice, garlic, salt, and pepper. Slowly whisk in the olive oil. Add beans, corn, onion, bell pepper, avocado, and cilantro, and toss just until incorporated. Cover and chill for about 2 hours. I found some fantastic cooking tips for cooks who are visually impaired to make cooking easier and safer at visionaware.org. This article is from visionaware.org, and the title is Safe Cooking Techniques for Cooks Who Are Blind or Have Low Vision. It begins with safe cooking tips. Wear short sleeves or roll your sleeves above the elbow when cooking at the stove. Wear oven mitts to handle pots and pans. Set a timer to remind you when to turn off the stove and electrical appliances. To make chopping easier and safer, use a flexible arm task lamp for extra light and a cutting board with an attached pivot knife for safety. Also, use a contrasting cutting board, for example, a white cutting board that contrasts with the red apple. Make sure all of your appliances are in good working order and avoid overloading circuits. Use a vegetable peeler instead of a knife for peeling fruits and vegetables. Use a pizza cutter rather than a knife for cutting, or a pivot knife that's connected to a cutting board. Don't store spices on a shelf above the stove. Always turn off the gas flame before you remove a pan from the burner. Don't wear clothing with long, loose sleeves when cooking. Here's a section for cutting and chopping. Use trays or cutting boards in colors that contrast with your food. For example, keep a white cutting board for chopping and slicing apples or carrots, and a dark colored board for onions. Use the white side of the cutting board for darker color foods, such as eggplant or broccoli, and the black side for lighter color foods such as onions and cheese. Make sure the cutting edge of your knife is facing downward before you cut or slice. You can identify the cutting edge of the knife blade without touching it. Since the cutting edge is usually curved, try rocking the knife blade forward and backward on the tabletop to determine when the cutting edge, which will rock, is facing downward. Try using a pizza cutter instead of a knife for slicing sandwiches. Here are some tips for measuring. Hold a light-colored measuring cup against a darker background when pouring milk, flour, sugar, and other light-colored ingredients. Measuring cups and spoons are available with large print, tactile, and contrasting markings. Use a measuring cup with raised numbers on the side or mark the cup with a 3D pen, such as a Highmark tactile pen or a spot and line pen, a 3D plastic liquid that makes raised lines, dots, and shapes to identify clothing, canned goods, frozen goods, and mark the settings on appliances. Use individually sized or stacking measuring cups to scoop desired amounts. Measure spices in your hand first to avoid pouring into a spoon. Some spice containers have a wide opening to insert a spoon, or use measuring spoons with large numbers. Here are tips for pouring. For cold liquids, again, use color contrasts. Dark pitchers and servers for milk and other light-colored liquids, a white pitcher for dark liquids, such as iced tea. When pouring into a glass, first locate the pitcher by trailing your hand along the table. Locate the spout by moving your hand up the pitcher, then turn the pitcher until the spout faces the glass. When pouring cold liquid into a glass, your finger placed over the edge of the glass can serve as a guide and help you know when the glass is almost full. With your other hand, move the glass toward the pitcher, keeping your index finger on the spout of the pitcher. Lift the pitcher slightly and touch the spout to the rim of the glass. Now hook your index finger over the rim of the glass so that your fingertip is inside the glass. Pour until you can feel the water or other liquid reach your index finger. Also, listen for sound changes as liquid reaches the top of the glass. You can also try pouring with the pitcher in the sink and the glass or cup on the adjoining countertop. This can make it easier to lift the pitcher or kettle and can help with spills and cleanup. Try practicing with empty containers first and pour over a tray to catch any spills. You may prefer to use an electronic liquid level indicator, also known as a Say When. This battery-operated device is placed at the top of a cup or glass and beeps when the liquid reaches the top. The Say When device can also be used when filling a cup from a water dispenser. Here are some tips for pouring hot liquids. The Sunbeam Hot Shot Beverage Maker heats 12 ounces of water in about 90 seconds at the touch of a button. It makes piping hot water for coffee, cereals, soups, cocoa, or tea. Microwave 1 cup of water for 2.5 minutes. Pre-measure the desired quantity of water and pour it through your automatic coffee maker with the filter basket in place. Fill a kettle with the desired amount of water, 1 cup for example, before heating and pouring. Use an electronic liquid level indicator. Here's some tips for peeling. Use a vegetable peeler rather than a knife. Hold the fruit or vegetable in one hand and the peeler in the other. Grasp the handle with your thumb on one side and your fingers on the other. Don't touch the moving rod inside the peeler. Hold the item at a 45-degree angle and, working on one half of the fruit or vegetable, start to peel on the surface, away from your body. Once the peelings have been removed, check the section with your index finger to feel if it's smooth. Peel until the half you're working on is finished. Then flip the food item so that the unpeeled portion is facing downward and continue peeling. To determine whether you have any peel left, run cold water over the fruit or vegetable and feel the surface with your fingertips. Here are some tips for placing pans on a burner. Always position the pan correctly on the burner before turning the stove on. Always turn off the burner before removing the pan. Flat surface stoves can be problematic, but some have tactile contrast to indicate the burner. Again, never turn on a burner until your pan is in position. Check the evenness of heat around the pan by holding your palm at chest level and circling your hand to determine the location of the heat source. Make sure the handles on the pots and pans and knobs on the lids are heat resistant. Make sure that the handles are turned in when cooking so you will not accidentally bump or knock your pots and pans to the floor. Also, be sure that the handle of the pan is not protruding over another burner. Here are some tips for baking. Make sure the oven racks are positioned correctly before turning on the oven. Always turn off the heat before removing items from the oven. When removing items, pull the oven rack partially out rather than reaching into the oven. Remember to push the rack back in and close the oven door as soon as possible after placing the item on a counter or other surface. Use long, heat-proof oven mitts to remove items from the oven. Long, heat-proof oven mitts protect hands and arms. Know where you're going to place the hot item before removing it from the oven. Oven doors that open down are safer than oven doors that open to the side. Always use an audible timer when baking. Here are some tips for turning foods. It's generally easier to use a double spatula as a turning device. Slide the item to the side of the pan, then slide the spatula underneath it. With the spatula, move the item to the center of the pan before flipping it over. Make sure you have one hand on the handle of the pan to prevent tipping. Here are some tips for testing food for doneness. If you were a seasoned cook before experiencing vision loss, you most likely relied on many techniques to determine when something was done, certainly not sight alone. So, while food timers and talking thermometers and other devices will help you compensate for vision loss in the kitchen, you can also learn to lean more heavily on skills and senses you've probably been using for years. Use touch carefully to determine when a cake is finished baking, or use the toothpick test. Insert a toothpick in the cake, and if you feel better sticking to the toothpick, the cake is not yet done. Listen for French fries to stop sputtering in their oil to know when they're done. Many foods smell a certain way when cooked. Learn to recognize the signals your other senses are sending you. Here are some tips for spreading. Practice with toast. It won't tear as easily as regular bread. With thick spreads, like peanut butter or margarine, use an organized pattern to spread outward from a certain point, left to right, top to bottom, or center to outside. You can touch the food to make sure that the spreading is complete. Some people find it easier to spread with the back of a spoon instead of a knife. Here are some ideas about adapting cookbooks and recipes. Cookbooks are available in Braille, large print, and recorded versions. If you have a computer and a printer, your own recipes can be typed and printed in as large a font as you need, or they can be handwritten in large print with a bold line marker. A flexible arm task lamp and a reading stand can help position your reading material. Sometimes a transparent yellow acetate overlay can make print easier to read. Low vision devices such as magnifiers, task lighting, and reading stands, and electronic and digital magnifiers can also help you read your cookbooks and recipes. And here are some useful tools and small appliances. There are many simple, inexpensive tools you may find helpful in the kitchen. For additional information on where to purchase products mentioned in this article, view a list of specialty product sources. Long oven mitts. Kitchen timer with raised markings or large print. Liquid level indicator. A safety food turner or a double spatula. A spatter shield. A cutting board with a food chute for pouring. Cutting boards in light and dark colors to contrast with food. Color-coded or high-contrast measuring cups and spoons. Individual measuring cups and spoons. Large print and broad handle measuring cup. Adjustable knife with a slice guide for adjusting slices. A 3D pen for marking appliances. A card and barcode reader for creating labels that can be read back. Boil control disc to keep foods from boiling over. A tomato and a vegetable slicer. You can find more household and kitchen tips at visionaware.org. Sometimes after a long, hot summer day, we just don't feel like cooking a full, heavy dinner right away. Well, I found a couple of great appetizer snacks on OprahMagazine.com that are very easy to put together. They make a delicious snack and they'll tide you over until you're ready to get into the kitchen. I found this recipe on Oprah.com, and it can also be found in Meredith Steele's Effortless Entertaining Cookbook. It's dried cherry and sage goat cheese. And the ingredients are very simple. It's 8 ounces of goat cheese, softened. 1 ounce of cream cheese, softened. 1/4 cup of dried cherries, chopped. 1 tablespoon of fresh sage, chopped. And 1 tablespoon of cherry preserves. And a pinch of flaked sea salt. And here are the directions. In a bowl, mix together goat cheese, cream cheese, dried cherries, and sage. Place a lightly greased 3-inch round form or biscuit cutter on a serving plate or board and spoon the cream cheese mixture into the form and pack it tightly. Remove the form and top cheese with cherry preserves and salt and serve with crackers. This can be made 2 days in advance and stored in the refrigerator. Set the cheese out at room temperature and top with cherry preserves prior to serving. We all have happy summer memories, and they often center around food and holidays. And in July, of course, we celebrate Independence Day. And our next story is a remembrance of exactly that, food and fun and families on the 4th of July. It's written for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution by Bill King, and it's entitled 4th of July Memories, Family, Food, and Fireworks. When I was a boy, the 4th of July was always a special day for me, possibly because my mother, a World War II bride from the UK, had chosen to be an American citizen, or maybe because I had always been fascinated by Revolutionary War history. Or perhaps it was because I had my very own 4th of July parade. I'm not sure what prompted me to start an Independence Day parade, but it was probably because Atlanta's Channel 2 televised an annual parade. The folks on Hope Avenue in Athens, where we lived, always commented in bemused wonder that it was the sons of the street's British-born resident who organized the 4th of July parade. But, to me, it made perfect sense. We weren't just marking the anniversary of America's independence. we were celebrating our heritage and the fact that our nation was founded by a bunch of British expatriates, like my mom. Anyway, a few days before the holiday, my brother Jonathan and I would start cajoling neighborhood kids into participating. The parade varied from year to year, but there were two musts. One was me and two other kids recreating the famous painting of a Revolutionary War trio consisting of a drummer, fife player, and flag bearer. My mother liked to recount how, when my dad was taking down the attic fan and a piece of wood clobbered Mom in the forehead, I informed her that the old sheet she'd made me grab out of the linen closet to staunch the bleeding would make the perfect, authentic head bandage for me in the next 4th of July parade. And so it did. For several years, in fact. The other standard part of our parade was a Miss Liberty float, consisting of whatever young girl we could talk into putting on a crown, holding a torch made from a cardboard paper towel tube and construction paper, and riding in a little red wagon pulled by one of the volunteers. One year, I got my friend Ferris, who didn't even live in our neighborhood, to participate, and his little sister Madeline was Miss Liberty, complete with a fairy princess gown. Ferris's dad, a University of Georgia professor, walked backward in front of the parade, shooting 8mm movie footage. After our parade, Dad would grill hamburgers and hot dogs, and Mom would make her potato salad, which wasn't heavily seasoned like some, just potato, hard-boiled egg, mayo, salt and pepper, though she did dress it up with some crunchy chunks of raw carrot for color. It was great when it was served warm. Through the years, the 4th remained a family favorite among holidays, perhaps because we all loved hamburgers, hot dogs, barbecue, which became our chosen menu topper as we got older, and fireworks. Every 4th of July evening, we'd sit out on the golf course where my father played to watch the fireworks extravaganza, then sit in the car to watch the city's fireworks show at a nearby park. We continued that tradition even after my wife Leslie and I had two kids of our own. The 4th meant barbecue in Athens with Grandma and Papa, and then fireworks. Some years we'd go to a pre-fireworks buffet at their country club, but most years my dad would pick up some barbecue in the surrounding small towns. Zeb's in Danielsville, Hot Thomas in Watkinsville, or Fresh Air in Bogart. My daughter Olivia remembers her grandmother always using a picnic-themed tablecloth decorated with hot dogs and ketchup bottles. For several years, Leslie, the kids and I would also participate in a lunchtime celebration in our Decatur area neighborhood. The folks on Faraday Place had been holding it since 1962, and the fare was usually hot dogs, chips, cookies, frozen pops, ice cream sandwiches, and maybe a flag cake. There were also pre-meal games for the kids, including the egg relay, water balloons, etc. A couple of years, there was music by a band featuring someone's grown daughter. And, hearkening back to my childhood, there was always a parade, featuring kids on bikes and scooters as well as in strollers. Olivia participated a couple of times, with her scooter beribboned in the national colors. Unfortunately, the celebration ended in 2014 after 52 years. Too many of the organizers had moved away. At home, Leslie sometimes would make a cake decorated with white icing, peppermint sticks, and cherries to look like a military drum. And some years, we wound up watching fireworks in downtown Decatur. As the kids got older, Olivia running the Peachtree Road race became part of our 4th routine. And in 2012, when he was working in Washington, our son Bill got to attend the White House celebration, complete with a Brad Paisley concert. We've even celebrated the 4th while visiting abroad, with my British cousin Lizzie and her family showing that they were good losers by fading our national holiday in 2014 with hamburgers and a red, white, and blue sign made by her daughter. In recent years, the 4th has meant my brother Tim joining us for takeout from Decatur's Community Q, including pulled pork, ribs, Brunswick stew, and traditional sides, including black-eyed peas with rosemary and bacon, in an order of their deservedly famous mac and cheese. And yes, there are still fireworks. Once the sun has gone down, set off down the street by an Indian family, which somehow seems extremely fitting to me, the son of an immigrant. Bill King is a retired writer-editor for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And I have to leave you with a perfect 4th of July dessert that is very fresh and very easy. I found it on tasteofhome.com, and it was submitted by Sue Gronholz of Beaver Dam, Wisconsin. And Sue says, I changed a recipe I found and ended up with this rich, fresh-tasting dessert. Decorated to resemble a flag, it's perfect for the 4th of July or any other patriotic occasion. And it's called red, white, and blue dessert. And it looks like a trifle. It's constructed that way. So I would make this in a tall bowl that you can dig into with a spoon. Here are the ingredients. 2 packages, 8 ounces each of cream cheese, softened. 1/2 cup sugar. 1/2 teaspoon vanilla extract, 1/2 teaspoon almond extract, 2 cups of heavy whipping cream whipped, 2 quarts strawberries halved and divided, 2 quarts blueberries divided. And here are the directions. In a large bowl, beat cream cheese, sugar, and extracts until fluffy. Fold in the whipped cream. Place 1/3 of the mixture in a 4-quart bowl. Reserve 20 strawberry halves and 1/2 cup of blueberries for garnish. Layer 1/2 of the remaining strawberries and blueberries over the cream mixture. Top with another 1/3 of the cream mixture and the remaining berries. Spread the remaining cream mixture on top. Use the reserved strawberries and blueberries to design a flag on top. We've run out of time for today's episode of Flavor. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Liz Elliott, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Flavor is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.